Hey everyone, real quick before we get to the actual live recording in front of a great crowd, I just want to take 15 seconds to remind you that if today's book sounds interesting to you, you could buy it and support the podcast at the same time by clicking the link in this episode's description. It's available in paperback, Kindle, and of course Audible for free if you're a first-time subscriber. Also, if you want to hear a few bonus minutes of this episode, you could join our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookpile. Finally, we'll keep you posted for when the video of this episode will be available to watch via the streaming series Dry Bar Unscripted. All right, without further ado, please welcome me and David Vance to the stage. Hey everyone, have you ever not had the time to watch a movie, so instead you listen to the audiobook of the novelization of that movie and then it's 14 hours long? Why not just listen to the movie? Today's book is the novelization of Star Wars Episode 7 in Roman numerals, The Force Awakens by Alan Dean Foster.
And this is The Book Pile.
I'm Kellen Erskine, I'm a comic, a father, and when I was a kid, there were three Star Wars movies, and everyone was fine with that.
And I'm David Vance. When we were picking a book to make fun of today, we said, what franchise has the chillest fans who love taking a joke?
I'm starting to think that the purpose of novelizing a movie is to make the movie seem better. Like, have you ever heard anyone say, the book based on the movie is better than the movie?
It does feel like that thing where you go to the club with your less hot friend so that you really pop.
A few years ago, Dave invited me to a club. Full disclosure, I love Star Wars. I'm not really into this movie. But that being said, I didn't go into this book to make fun of the movie because of the movie. I went into it to make fun of Alan Dean Foster's career. My thoughts in a nutshell on this book, I thought the first half, he doesn't really get in his own way too much, but then at some point, he gets super comfortable with using Star Wars as his clay and gives himself permission to share with us so much of what we didn't ask for. But rather than like add extra scenes, he just sort of makes the existing ones much longer. Like conversations are stretched, speeches are lengthened, like in short, he made it talkative and boring. He made Star Wars Star Trek. But what did you think?
That's a great, like, mic pass moment. So I don't want to speak for Kellen, but I do think making fun of Star Wars is one of the most fun ways to be killed.
All right, and without further ado, this is The Roast of The Force Awakens in 5 Lessons. Lesson number 1. Hope that no one calls your literary bluff. So, I like to pretend that I'm smart just as much as everyone else who exists, but as I was listening to this book, I realized that not only does Alan Dean Foster use big fancy words, he uses so many of them at complete random. It's like he has a Powerball machine with just like verbs and adjectives on ping pong balls. Here are some of my favorite lines where the words just don't even make sense. On the monitor, the blast door descended with gratifying speed. I'm going to say this once, and then you can just imply that I say it 30 more times throughout this episode. This is not how you use that word. Imagine a policeman pulls you over. He's like, you know how fast you were going? You're like, well, like, gratifyingly fast. That's... Here's another from, is it Supreme Leader Snoke? No. I don't care. The map to Skywalker must be eradicated. Because it's a virus map? Like, I don't... All right, Rey. This is Rey looking across these crashed Star Destroyers that lay scattered across the desert, which, by the way, is a better way to put it than he does. It was where technology went to die. Mountains of metal, cliffs of plasticine derivatives, oceans of splayed ceramics were jumbled together in a phantasmagoric industrial badland. Like, what do you see when you picture an ocean of splayed ceramics? I see nothing, because ceramics can't be splayed. I actually Googled splayed ceramics for images. It had nothing, and then it just said, did you mean... applied ceramics. And the only time I've ever heard the word plasticine is in Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Yeah. Like that. He should have leaned into it. He's like, piles of polychromatic refuse populated by rocking horse people eating marshmallow pies. That's a Beatles joke. Like this. If he didn't get away from the quicksand, it was clear he was going to join the TIE fighter in premature internment. It's a weird, quick burial joke, I guess. This last particular subset of misapplied verbiage, I like to call, can you direct that? Meaning, if you couldn't tell a real person in real life how to say something in a certain way, maybe it doesn't exist. And you're just a self-indulgent writer who thinks any multisyllabic word is a great one. So this is when we first meet Han Solo. He says, there was nothing to interfere with his angry expression. Boom, we got it. But he continues. It filled a face scarred with know-how, aged by experience and world-weary, characteristic of someone who had set foot on dozens of worlds. His eyes were hazel, his gray hair tousled, and he wore the look of a man who had seen too much too soon and had been forced to deal with idiots all too often. You know that expression. Imagine you're directing Harrison Ford, and on take two, you're like, okay, love what you're doing. but you couldn't make, like, a little more angry, you know, scarred with know-how. Make it look like you've been to a lot of planets. Can you do that? Like, you've seen too much in a short period of time, and you deal with a lot of idiots. Action! It's really just a cheat, right? Like, I don't think you can hide backstory in a face. Imagine if J.K. Rowling described her characters like, Harry Potter wore glasses and a lightning-shaped scar. And he was wearing the expression of, you know, when your parents have been killed by a dark wizard. And he tries to kill you, but then the spell backfires, and then that guy turns into a mere shadow of himself. But the only reason that that wizard chose you is because he misunderstood a vague prophecy that made it self-fulfilling by virtue of choosing the Potters as his victims. Also, his hair was messy.
That is genius exposition, though. Like, Darth Vader had a face like he was Luke's father.
That's perfect, though. I think you hit it. That's why he's wearing the mask the
whole time. Yeah, because he would give it away.
He sort of looks like him.
If Darth Vader took off his mask and looked exactly like Luke, do you know how happy that would make me? They have, like, the same bob. Every once in a while, his golden locks spill out the back.
Just uses the Force to suck him back in. Speaking of which, I'm sure someone's written a dumb Reddit article about this, but why didn't they ever just use the Force to be like, bah, your appendix? Why the 30-minute lightsaber sequence?
All right. So you could just...
All right, my last favorite one. In describing Kylo Ren's voice, though emanating from a human throat, the voice was... What is his rewriting process? I think it's backwards from everyone else. It started as coming from a throat. No?
No.
The voice was distorted by the mask that had the sick flavor of the disembodied. So I think... Imagine, Dave, if we were having a conversation about Kylo Ren's voice, and you were telling me about it because you'd just been interrogated by him because you're bad at keeping secrets. And I was like, so what did he sound like? And you're like, disembodied, right? And then I would be like, sure, but I'd be like, what flavor? Anyway, my takeaway from that is if you ever catch me writing anything with the words that you know I know don't belong there, please internment me prematurely.
All right, lesson two. Follow these rules to be a good writer. So, Kellen, you and I both like to write, and we are not nearly as successful as Alan Dean Foster. And so I hacked his computer, and I stole the list of his rules for writing. And I'm going to share it with you, and so we will finally be as good as he is. So rule one, If you are riding Han Solo, famous bad boy, make him sound like a sweet suburban mom. My favorite Han Solo quote used to be, "Then I'll see you in hell." But now it's, "No matter where you go, the galaxy's just full of surprises." You want Han Solo lines that would also work as a vinyl stencil on a beige wall in Draper, Utah. Another Han moment. It was all very sweet and charming, Han mused. If only he could forget that they were stuck on a hostile world. He talks like my mom sadly reading the news. All right, Kellen, rule two, never use a natural word. Kellen and I prepped these before, did basically the same thing, and did not overlap on a single weird word. I think somewhere in Alan Dean Foster's evolutionary lineage, he got a gene that tells him that if he uses a big enough word, someone will mate with him. There's a scene of Kylo Ren sitting down, and a bad writer would say, "Kylo Ren sat down." Here's what a good writer would write. I may have added one part to this for dramatic effect. Alone in the room, Kylo Ren, saturnine of aspect, lithe of build, tortured of mien, mother of dragons, and troubled of eye, gazed at the recipient of his confession. He writes like he gets paid by the word, and then he uses that money to buy thesauruses. Another one, they're eating lunch. A bad writer would say, "They ate lunch." A good writer would say, "Ray grabbed and consumed examples of anything within reach without bothering to ascertain its genesis. Finn found himself envying the nearby spherical form of BB-8, for whom such messy organic calisthenics were merely an excuse to meditate on the superiority of mechanical life." If I wasn't convinced before, I am now certain this book was written by a droid. Finally, rule three, good writing needs surprise. So when you add things to someone else's story, make sure they don't make sense. Han gives Rey a blaster and asks if she knows how to fire it, and she says, "You aim it and pull the trigger." That's in the movie. In the book, Han says, "A bit more to this model than that. Put a little more effort in, get a little more result out." Kellen, you look like someone who's fired a gun. You know how it fires harder if you just really try?
All right, lesson three. Describe what we've seen before. At one point, Alan Dean Foster writes, "A lightsaber." This is Kylo Ren's lightsaber. "A lightsaber appeared in one hand, flaring to life. A barely stable crimson shaft, notable for two smaller projections at the hilt. A killer's weapon, an executioner's fetish of choice." Now I know what it looks like. And is it an executioner's fetish of choice, or is it just the only one that exists?
Right.
So it's Kylo Ren's choice. Another one describing BB-8. "Its head spun, facing all directions simultaneously. The spherical body did not need to turn, only to accelerate. This BB-8 did with alacrity." Quick audience question. What does alacrity mean? I had to look it up. Does anyone know? Purpose? That's close. What kind of purpose?
Gratifying the fact.
Love it when we get heckled with callbacks. It means cheerful readiness, but boy, does it just sound like poisonous battery acid. Also, why is he describing BB-8 to us? Who's reading this book who has not seen any of the movies? Like, who finally decides on Star Wars, but they're like, "You know what? I'm going to go for the book 7 installments in. That's where I'm going to start." Like, when you recommend Harry Potter, you're like, "Start at 5, work your way back." Here's a couple descriptions that I would add if I wrote this book, seeing as we have to describe everything. Chewbacca, a Wookiee, covered head to foot with longish brown hair and no visible gender markings. Luke Skywalker stood, silhouetted against a gray ocean, his face resembling an ancient Mark Hamill.
All right, lesson four, time for a game. So, Kellen, I got you an early Christmas present. We've seen how Alan Dean Foster writes Star Wars when he has to follow the movie. What you may not know is that he wrote a pitch for episode 9, just pure Alan Dean Foster. And it's the best thing you've ever heard.
So before he knew anything about the
movie? Before it had
movie.
Come out. No one knew anything.
Okay.
This is his pitch for what it should have been. I came up with the craziest story ideas I could. I'm going to read you a plot point, and you tell me if it's me or Alan Dean Foster.
Okay.
And I want the audience to play too. All right, here we go. Is this me or Alan Dean? Kylo Ren chops off the top of Rey's head and reveals her to be part droid. That's why she learned to use the Force so quickly, because of her droid skills. Now that everyone knows Rey is part droid, C-3PO flirts with her. Is that me or Alan Dean? What do you think?
I'm going to say you.
That is Alan Dean. All right, Kellen is 0 for 1. It sounds like most of you got Alan Dean on that one. All right, number 2. Supreme Leader Snoke comes back to life again. Turns out he made countless clones of himself before he was killed. A long flashback shows that he hates the Skywalker so much because decades ago, Obi-Wan knocked him into a vat of acid, making him ugly.
I think that's you.
Everybody?
You.
That's Alan Dean.
What?
All these Snokes are clones. He could have cloned himself without the scars. All right, number 3. Luke Skywalker also comes back from the dead. He fights a full army of Snokes. After beating them, he dies again in the same way as the last movie. And his last words are, Aunt Beru, me or Alan Dean?
You.
A lot of Alan Dean, some yous. Kellen?
I want to say you, but I'm going to lean Alan Dean because I think that he wants to think that this is his rosebud.
That is also Alan Dean. It's all Alan Dean. I couldn't come up with anything wild enough to be as funny as what he did on purpose. Anyway, everyone, give yourself a wonderful treat. Jenny Nicholson has a YouTube video where she reads the full script, and it is wonderful. He was the first exposure people had to Star Wars, because he ghostwrote the novelization of A New Hope back in the 70s.
Oh.
And his came out before the movie, and it's awful.
Oh, man, before the movie came out, I hope you went to George Lucas, like, got some notes. All right, lesson 5. Have every character sound exactly the same as you, the author. It is wild how much he took the characters in this movie and just sort of his way of adding to the movie was just having them talk like him. So Dave messaged me. I had already listened to the book. Dave messaged me and he was like, I'm about halfway through it and I'm not sure that there's enough that I can make fun of. And I was like, okay, but have you read it? So then he asked, should I watch the movie? And I feel like that's sort of what made the difference, right? Because there were a couple of times while I was listening to it where I was like, I do not remember this speech being 11 minutes long. And so I went back through and found he changed, not just changed, he didn't really change, he just added so much over the top of it. Snoke demurred. Remember when he demurs?
Oh, I remember.
Speaking to Kylo Ren, it is far more than that. It's where you are from, what you are made of, the dark side and the light. The finest sculptor cannot fashion a masterpiece from poor materials. He must have something pure, something strong, something unbreakable with which to work. He paused, reminiscing. And this is the point where I was like, I don't remember him talking about sculptures. I don't remember any sort of reminiscing.
Yeah, I love sentimental Snoke.
And also that projection, like how many of you guys saw the movie with Snoke? He was like 90 feet tall. I remember seeing that and going, this is incredible. There's like a monster emperor. And then you see the next movie and he's like in a bathrobe and he's 5'9".
Which is a fine height. And he's bald.
Okay. Don't clap at that. That's a low cut. That's not fair. I made fun of Snoke. He made it look like I was making fun of him. and then roasted me in retribution for something I didn't even do. Stop Allendine fostering my words. Also, the one thing that every one of these movies gets wrong when there's like a projection that they're talking to that I've learned from Zoom is that at some point Snoke had to be like, wait, sorry, are you still talking? Froze there for a second. Excuse me.
Snoke is clearly looking at his own hologram the whole time.
Setting it lower so he looks even taller.
All right, random facts. So Finn sees his Stormwrapper, wow. Finn, they're wrapped in armor. Finn sees his...
That was another part of episode 9.
Yeah.
So, wrapping stormtroopers, hear me out.
Finn sees his stormtrooper comrade die in front of him, and it's heartbreaking. It's this major push that gets him to abandon the First Order. Minutes later, he's in the back of a TIE fighter strafing dozens of his comrades. His Walter White journey happens so fast.
So this is Finn in the book making a joke a la Allendine Foster. The amount of energy required to do this is, well, all I know is that it involves a lot of zeros following the primary number.
So he cuts out like half the jokes. And then the other half, he takes a joke, makes it longer, explains it, but not even correctly. So there's a scene in the movie where Rey is asking about an animal called a Rathtar, and it's very dangerous. And Finn says, you ever hear of the Trillia Massacre? No. Good. Very quick, quippy joke, kind of a chuckle. Here's that joke in the book. Finn moved closer to Rey. I know a perfect example that explains everything you'd ever want to know about Rathtars. She eyed him expectantly. Ever hear of the Trillia Massacre? She shook her head, no. Good, he replied. And that was the extent of his explanation, briefly referencing an incident so vile and depraved that he wished only to assure himself she knew nothing about it.
So in the movie, there's when they're broken into Starkiller Base and they finally have a little success, the tables have turned, and Finn, he has a blaster, and what's-her-name is there? Is it...
Rey?
No, the silver stormtrooper.
Oh, Phasma.
Phasma. Is that short for phasmagorical? It's just this quick joke where he's like overly excited that he's not in danger anymore. He goes, I'm in charge now. I'm in charge. And it's just sort of this quirky, funny little moment. So this is Allendine Foster's take. Not anymore. My name's Finn. A real name for a real person. And I'm in charge now. And so in describing these octopus creatures that are on Han Solo's ship, he says, like the rest of them, their mouth parts were exceptionally robust. Design or not, Han now had no intention of waiting around long enough to see whether the material of which the port was composed of was tougher than Rathtar dentition. It's like, you could say teeth.
Yeah.
It's okay to say teeth. Have you read Hemingway? It's okay. I imagine Allendine Foster reads A Farewell to Arms like, what was this guy, 6 years old?
Which is how we feel reading him. So the fact that Finn is a stormtrooper and he feels guilty and leaves makes me think, what if stormtroopers always miss because they're conscientious objectors? Like, Jedi mind tricks don't work on them. They're just being nice.
So there's this part when everyone is finally collected at the Rebel base and they're doing they're explaining their plans going forward. So they show, you know, a hologram of this new Imperial base, and someone says, it's another Death Star. And another official says, I wish that were the case. And they show this side by side to show that the original Death Star is like a quarter the size of this new base. And he goes, this is Starkiller Base. Oh, so it's not another Death Star because it has a slightly different name? It's still a Death Star. Like, imagine that I made a pair of Air Jordans, but I made them this big. Same design, still have the Nike swoosh on them. And Dave is like, oh, you made some Air Jordans? And I'd be like, I wish. These are Jordan Breezes. totally different idea. Not the third time we've done it. All right, so Dave, I am. You have not seen this yet. I mean, you watched the movie. I'm sending you the script from the movie and then the script that I dictated from the book for the same scene. This is Kylo Ren interrogating Poe Dameron, or as the voice actor for this book says 200 times, Poe Dameron, and no one ever corrected him. It's like when Lando calls Harrison Ford Han, and they're like, that's fine.
We got it.
All right, so we'll read through how the movie goes, and then we'll get into the same conversation, the same scene in the book. All right. You're Poe. I'm Kylo Ren. Kylo, I realize he's sort of like if Bane from Batman, if me and him had a child. Because I'm fairly monotone. I have to work not to be. Some things I can control. Not my hair loss.
I can tell this is going to stay with us, huh?
I had no idea we had the best pilot in the Resistance. Comfortable?
Not really.
I'm impressed. No one has been able to get out of you what you did with the map.
You might want to rethink your technique.
Where is it?
The Resistance will not be intimidated by you.
Where is it?
Cut to Kylo Ren walking out of the room.
It's in a droid.
So there we go.
What was scene.
That's scene. That's like 20 seconds. Now, who has a stopwatch that can help? Right here, bear t-shirt. All right, get your stopwatch ready. Let me know when you're ready to go. I'm not even going to read the descriptions in between all the dialogue. We're going to do the same scene, Kylo Ren versus Poe interrogation. Ready?
Yep.
Action.
I had no idea we had the best pilot in the Resistance on board.
Same so far, right?
Revealing yourself through your futile attempt on my life was foolish. Revenge is little more than adolescent concession to personal vanity. Even had you not been slow and ill-prepared, Taka was already dead. Comfortable?
Not really. The accommodations leave something to be desired.
I regret the necessity. They are gratuitous in my presence. But those others who have made your acquaintance possess only the most primitive abilities. And further defiance on your part would demand their unnecessary excursions. None of this unpleasantness need be necessary. We both wanted the same thing from the old man. Perhaps he was more forthcoming with you than he was with me.
You might want to rethink your technique. Hard to get cooperation from a dead man.
All right, Dave, I'm going to ask you to do that again because in the book it says Poe replied phlegmatically.
What does that even
it's
mean?
It's not what you think it means. It means in a way that shows you are not easily made angry or upset. Go.
You might want to rethink your technique. Hard to get cooperation from a dead man.
A truism upon which you might personally reflect. It is pathetic, though, is it not? You and I both in pursuit of a ghost. Where did you put it?
Where did I put what?
And now, just how I react when one of my kids lies about something that I know they're lying about, Kylo Ren fires back at him with,
please. All time is transitory. And mine especially so.
And it goes on, but where are we at right here?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. 20 seconds to 2 minutes.
It's like he started with, okay, what does Kylo think? And put down the original dialogue and then was like, now what do I think? What are just any thoughts I had?
And then in perhaps the most unintentionally meta sentence in all of literature, not long after this part of the book, Foster gives Kylo Ren this line.
How is it possible that a conversation becomes so tedious so quickly?